Mr. Axel?
This is board time on Wednesday, the 4th of June. We have an agenda here. I think first order of business, though, is to welcome our newest commissioner.
Yes.
Voted in as such yesterday, Mr. Ed Barnes. Well, welcome.
Yeah. Thank
you very much.
I was just talking to Ed. We got him halfway voted in. I said, Ed, your paycheck doesn't start until you get sworn in.
Uh-oh.
I said, we should have sworn him in and then ceremony later.
We can send the change jar around if you'd like us to.
Well, he sure started early all right. He was there till what, 10 o'clock last night when we wrapped up. And so I assume you're in high demand already. All those citizens from Livingston Mountain, they want your attention.
Hey, my question is, does the elk on your tie have hoof rot?
You know where that elk come from? Colorado.
Oh, is that right?
I was going through the airport of Colorado, and then they had those concession stands.
Uh-huh. Buy that one?
And so I bought a green tie brown tie and a green tie and a.
Did you get one to Bruce?
Tie. Not yet.
Okay.
He wants them though.
The yellow goes great with your yellow shirt there.
And the other part of it comes from California.
It comes Canada.
From
Canada. Yeah.
Covering on St. Patty's
Day,
too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got our very capable lobbyist here, nice Mike Burgess.
Axel's getting in an email of an agenda, and I didn't tell him to print out copies. He thought I'd.
Had to tell him that?
Well, he usually does it without me having to tell. So.
Well, he needs refresher training on occasion.
I don't think so, but he's. He's grabbing a list. So.
Yeah.
I can just start. So,
Mike, have you met Ed before?
I did. Out in the hall, and we've met in Olympia before.
Okay.
I've seen him up there. And
okay.
Been in meetings that he was in. So I thought I'd come down because you haven't seen me since session ended. As you know, we ended a couple of months ago. Frankly, I've just been at home, doing work from home, family stuff, things like that, but wanted to make the rounds. Would have preferred to have been down last month, but you all had... We had scheduling conflicts, and Commissioner Medora was in Chelan. I know that Commissioner Milkey, you had your family issue and things like that. So today worked out. And again, just kind of wanted to run through. These are some of the items that we had on our specific agenda last year that we worked on Olympia. You may or may not remember the outcome of them. We'll run through those real quickly. And then just talk about some other things that Jeff and Axel have put forward to me since session ended, and then let the three of you start thinking about, you know, what we want to be doing in 2015. For introductory purposes, you'll remember this was a short session. In the biennial budget, we're going into the long session next year, the 105-day. I think the session will be dominated by a discussion on education funding. Again, this is the McCleary case that you're probably familiar with, and the Supreme Court's mandate or suggestion or whatnot. The legislature wasn't funding education enough, and they need to do more to do that. Depending on who you talk to in the budget circles, there will not be a budget deficit, but on paper there's not, but in practice there will be because they do have to fund McCleary and meet the funding standards of basic education. There's talk of how they can deal with that. They could do it through, you know, general tax increases, go after tax loopholes, cut parts of the budget, or another option would be that the legislature just redefines what basic education is, and that kind of changes the ballgame. I get a little out of my skis here, though, because I'm not, you know, completely familiar with how basic ed is defined, but I think that's what the session is going to be centered around. There is talk of potentially a transportation package being addressed. I'm skeptical of that. You could find three other lobbyists that would tell you they think it happens, so I think it's just too early to tell right now. Having said that, though, we certainly need to get ourselves in position with our projects that I think we'll be carrying over from what we talked about last year when it comes to that. So that's just kind of where things are right now. Legislators are in campaign mode. It's pretty quiet in terms of my world. Sure.
Mike, I'm kind of curious. I would think that if you put the big rocks in the jar first, that you would, the natural process would be to decide up front the number one most important court-ordered mandate is that you would say, okay, we're going to start the budget with this much funding for education, mm-hmm. and then you work on the other smaller rocks and with that, instead of trying to save that for the last, so we don't have enough.
And that's in that the very point you make has been a discussion point in Olympia on how the budget should be built.
but they have never done it that way, right?
Some caucuses have, some haven't. Certain legislators have certainly been making that point in years past, and things like that. But
you got something to say about that, Don?
Just Senator? It's a great concept. It makes a lot of sense. It's quite logical. But I found over the years there's not a whole lot of logic in Olympia.
I tell groups that I talk to every time in Olympia that...
I wish they would do it that way. Make it easier on everybody. Take care of the biggest problem first and then go down the line.
Yeah. Wait till the 11th hour before sunny day.
But you're right, Commissioner. I mean, it's been a topic. And I think, again, I think it'll dominate the session next year. You may remember, too, one year ago, Senator Benton and I were talking. We were a month away from finishing session last year. Remember, we went until June. Is it 30 or 31 days in June? I forget. But we went until the very last day. Mm-hmm. We went until June 30th last year. Because we took 3 weeks off after session, 2 or 3 weeks off, right? And then two straight 30-day special sessions. So we were a month away. I looked at my wife last week and reminded her of that.
The latest shiny die in 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, and unfortunately, I'm skeptical that it'll be different next year. I hope it's not, but, you know, I don't want to borrow trouble. But anyway, it's going to be a long session next year. Again, dominated, by the education funding discussion and all the other stuff that always seems to pop up. So specific to our items and what we were working on last year, we had that conservation futures levy bill. Remember, that was the one that would have given you flexibility on how you do it with the park.
25% for maintenance.
There you go. That bill passed the Senate. It did not make it in the House. It was in play up until the very last day, probably until a couple hours before the session ended, but it just didn't get there. So if that's a topic we'd like to have come back for next year, mm-hmm. I'm hearing yeses there. So.
And Ed, you understand what that is? It allowed the conservation futures right now were limited because after a while we have purchased so much land to conserve that we have to make sure that there's money to maintain that. And right now, because we've been so successful in purchasing it, we can't keep buying more because we can't afford what we got.
The current law almost acts as a disincentive to buy more land because
if you've been using the broker,
right? Because as good stewards of the land, you don't want to not you want to be able to maintain what you're purchasing, and so you don't want to buy something you can't maintain and operate. So this bill would allow. There's some kickers in there in terms of length of time and the percentage that you could use for M&O. You have to have a certain amount of acreage. You have to have been in the program for a certain amount of years before you'd be able to take full advantage of it. But
it's rather high.
It was high. And you all are you're a strong program. Incidentally, Spokane County is strong as well. And they have a significant interest in this bill as well. So,
Let me just say that your lobbyist here was instrumental in helping us work out an agreement. Unfortunately, the Nature Conservancy broke the agreement, didn't keep their word, which was very disappointing. But when we had it before the Senate committee, there was some concern from the Trust for Public Lands and the Nature Conservancy in terms of the thresholds, right? And because right now you're max at 15%, that's it. So if you buy a lot of land like we have, we bought over 5,000 acres in the last 25 years, and we're getting up close to that 15% maintenance. We won't be able to buy any more if we can't maintain it, and that's why we put in this. If you own so many acres, you could go to 20% for maintenance. Right. If you own so many acres, you could go to 25. And if you've been doing it for 20 years, so we got that worked out. And right at the very end, Mike was in the office with those guys. We were negotiating the details, and Mike said, it doesn't just mean you're neutral. It means you support it when it goes to the House, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll be there to testify for it. And they both said yes and shook our hands, didn't they?
Right, and one group did. To their credit, one group did.
And the land trust folks kept their word, right? The Nature Conservancy guys disappeared, actually even called legislators and tried to get it amended on the floor. It was in the Senate, which caused us some trouble, but we got it passed anyway, mm-hmm. right? And then disappeared, never showed up in the House. So we think that's why it was killed. So we're going to go back around this year. We've already worked with our local Columbia Land Trust guy, and we're going to make sure that doesn't happen again next year. But boy, those guys, you know, once you make a deal like that, you're supposed to stick to it, you know.
So has the bill been refined enough to make it as palatable and passable as possible?
I think so. Well,
it has now.
We need to run it by,
I think.
We need to, you know, have Senator Benton and you all take a look. But I think the final version that passed, or that was heard in the House committee but didn't ultimately pass, is probably where we'd start. Because it did, it incorporated input from some groups. There was a few suggestions that we thought were good suggestions that
we
took, and they didn't. But they didn't change the nature of the bill. They were, I'd view them as maybe technical plus. But I think the bill language itself is in a good spot, and we have a good thing to start off of. So we learned strategically. There's probably some things we'll do different, and we'll deal with that when session starts. But
have a better shot this time.
Sounds like that's a bill that you all, and for planning purposes, we're here today talking. I'd probably, my vision would be I'd come down in September-ish and have been communicating with Axel and Jeff and Mark and whoever about other bills maybe the county would want. Get a more formalist then do the meeting we do right after is it Identity Clark County's breakfast? Is that what it's called? Their Legislative Outlook breakfast?
Chamber breakfast.
We've had really good luck getting that room and getting in, you know, almost two-thirds of the legislators in that room, which is pretty rare to do. So if we can, I think we should follow that same course and have an agenda.
It's because the guy that coordinates that is awesome.
Well, actually, yeah. Do you know who coordinates it now?
Put your horn down.
It's a rare opportunity. You very seldom get that many legislators captive in a room for that long. Yeah. So it's
so
a
just,
pretty
just
great
to summarize that, the Conservation Futures one, basically it allows it lifts the limit from 15% for maintenance to up to a maximum of 25% if you have a lot of history with it. And it basically allows us to be better stewards over the conservation properties we already have purchased, right?
True.
Originally 30, but one of the things we negotiated with them was 25. Okay. 30 they thought was too high, but yeah. Right. So
certainly I think that's a good idea. Tom, yeah, I assume you do too.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Barnes?
What's the key, what's been your key for purchasing the 5,000 acres around streams, around wetlands, basis for you?
We have a 25-year acquisition plan that we update every 6 to 8 years. We just finished updating the acquisition plan. The board approved the new acquisition plan. That acquisition plan, is geared toward completing trail systems. So we give a higher priority to a piece of property that will help us complete a trail, like along the East Fork of the Lewis River, as opposed to maybe a piece somewhere else that won't help complete a trail. We take into consideration if there's riparian habitat, if it's salmon, if it's mammal habitat, what kind of growth or vegetation is on the property, and does it fit into a trail system in the future, and is the property conducive to public use? All those things go into this, and we utilize very heavily the Columbia Land Trust folks because they're really good at this, and so they helped us. In fact, they paid for half of the research that we used to put together the acquisition plan, and so it's based on the criteria that the board has set of wanting to complete trails, wanting to finish things, have parks that are actually accessible, you know, if easy to have parking areas in and things of that nature. So there's a purpose to it. They don't just willy-nilly, Harry called up last week, he wants to sell his property to the county. Oh, let's buy it. You know. So we try to follow the recreation office at the state requires that we do an updated acquisition plan every 6 years. And so we have just recently submitted our new six-year plan.
Lucia Falls, one of those.
Lucia Falls is on the list. There are pieces of property around there that are on the list. The other consideration is if property owners have contacted us and asked us to preserve their property, you know, because they don't want to sell it to a developer, right? In fact, we've got one of those right now that'll be coming up on the agenda here pretty soon.
So that's our plan, but this bill doesn't affect.
That bill doesn't affect the plan.
This just allows, once we got it, to be able to steward
it.
Right.
What we. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem.
Okay. We had the two stormwater flexibility bills. Boy, I've got the two numbers there. I should have put down what they were. But there was the one that had the fee increase, having DOT pay their equal fee. Right now they pay 15% rather than...
DOT has a statutorily mandated discount of 70% on the clean water fee.
And we had the bill that would have eliminated that exemption for them or that special treatment. And then we had the other one on what was the reporting back to them.
The other piece of that, I think, if I remember, was that they, once we get the only 30% of the funding,
where
we can only use it on state projects for stormwater. So it doesn't go into our, we have to keep a separate pool of funding, which is annoying.
The bills did not pass, but Senator Benton was able to get them amended in to the transportation budget on, so you don't have to do the report anymore, and you can spend the money where you want. The fee structure stayed the same way. The fee structure is a difficult animal. It's a hard one to pick at because you're taking money away from an agency. That's just harder to do.
Spend it where you want. Is that retroactive or is that day four?
It would have been enacted when the supplemental transportation budget was enacted and signed into law, and it's only good till the middle of 2015. So it's current law now, and that's why it's still on list. Is we need to come back if that's the board's direction.
I think the state still owns us from before.
And pass a permanent law.
They do. Can I jump in?
Of course.
6116, too steep of a hill, $11 million hit on DOT. They vehemently oppose it, okay? And they will continue to vehemently
oppose it.
I'm
curious, though, but the formula was just to go from 30% that they paid to 100%. Is there, so we're not even going to try to go 30 to 35 or
we talked about compromises, and they're not interested.
So we're not changing the rate. We're just adding flexibility.
The success of 6116 will likely be tied to any revenue increase. If we can get a revenue increase out of the legislature, then we should make part of that deal that DOT pays more of their fair share on the clean water costs, okay, instead of just 30%. So maybe we can get to 40 or 50 if there's a revenue package, right? Without a revenue package, they don't have a dime, two nickels to rub together to pay anymore, so they're going to oppose it. The best one for us and gives us more flexibility is 6117. There's two pieces of that. It requires that we submit a report to DOT on how we're going to spend their fees, their paltry 30%.
Remove the requirement.
And that this bill would remove that requirement. And the second one would be that we don't have to spend it on their facilities, that they pay like everybody else. I mean, the county road fee isn't restricted to county road impacts. Everyone pays a clean water fee. And we don't want to be restricted. It's about 70-some thousand a year. Now, what I've discovered since is that DOT refused to pay the 2008, 2009, and 2010 fee.
Really?
That they are in arrears to the county for over $220,000 in fees. That has now accumulated penalties and interest in excess of $400,000. We are carrying a bill to DOT on our books at the treasurer's office for over $400,000
in penalties and fees.
I've recently written a letter to the Secretary of Transportation asking her to please pay their bad debt, you know, their past bills, because they haven't paid them. And so we're waiting for a decision on that.
So I wonder if they pay in full when it's now this year, if that money becomes flexible.
Yes, it does.
That'd be nice.
Bon, does that mean that... that when I was on the commission, the commission controlled the department before Christine got mad at Doug McDonald and screwed up the works with you guys.
Exactly.
Does that mean that the years that you're talking about, did you want to go back to prior to the county being part of this lawsuit or the stormwater stuff? You want to go back those 3 years and pick
we just want them to pay what they owe. Yeah, yeah.
Well, but you want to go back, and the commission. When I was on the commission, they would never approve that. If you were in the ball game from day one, they always divvied up and paid the money. But if you wanted a county or wanted to go back and add additional money, like the 3 years I think you were just mentioning,
right?
The commission said no. The legislature didn't want. do any part of that.
I told her in the letter I would work with the treasurer to try to mitigate the penalties and the and the interest, right?
Yeah.
You know, we can probably work with them on that.
Okay.
But the actual fee that they were billed for that they just never paid, they still owe that. I mean, that's a bill. That was a valid bill that they owe.
And those bills went out back then years
ago. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
We're not just all of a sudden backbilling them.
No.
Back in 2008, we billed them for 2008.
Absolutely. They were billed, and they just ignored us and didn't pay it, and nobody on our staff at the time pursued it for some reason.
And that's just simply a separate matter. That's not this bill.
Right. It's not related to this, but it's kind of...
It's exactly the same, only different, I guess. So the policy of the not doing the report and the flexibility where the is current law, but it expires because it was done in the transportation budget, and the budgets are they're finite periods of time. So conceivably, we'd want to run legislation and have a very easy argument to say, hey, entire legislature, you passed this language in your supplemental budget. Mm-hmm. Let's just make it permanent. So if that's something the board would like us to do, we'll do that one.
So basically, the main change on this is to allow the county Department of Environmental Services to let that go flow into the Clean Water Fund, which
unrestricted.
All of it, unrestricted, so that it can do clean water stuff.
Yep. Wherever it's needed.
Instead of just saying something, it needs to be right there next to that road.
Right. DOT.
And incidentally, DOT didn't oppose that.
DOT did not oppose the bill.
DOT actually testified in favor, or they were neutral, but they testified neutrally in favor, which was interesting. But they said they were neutral, but then they said it was go ahead. And they thought the report, frankly, was probably a waste of time, too. And they said go ahead. So they're not opposed to this at all.
So we could pass that?
I don't want to say yes now, and it doesn't pass.
Well, we did pass.
We did.
We got every legislator to vote for it.
Yeah. We need to make a permit.
But only in the budget, which
the board said, go ahead.
2 years.
Right.
So now we've got to get it into the actual statute.
Okay, fellow commissioners, is that a green light?
So Lynn Peterson is in favor of you going this direction, as you've got with Wagner.
Their department lobbyist was at the hearing where the bill was heard. He came up and testified. He testified against the fee one,
right,
but on this one, he said that they didn't feel that the report added anything and that they had no opposition to this bill.
That's
the DOT's official position, is they have no opposition to it.
And
I said in one of my speeches on the floor that they supported it.
They'd be okay right away saying,
we don't support it,
they've set the
but
precedent.
We don't oppose it either. So.
They've set the precedent that they'd be that they're okay with this. So,
still have to do the report.
No.
No
report, and you're flexible on where you spend it.
If we pass the law.
But right now you are.
And, of course, all of the clean water projects that you do, there is in-depth reporting that you continue to provide to the Department of Ecology.
Correct.
And all that stuff is already it's redundant to do that. So I would think, why wouldn't we support this?
Yeah.
When we come back in September,
we'll
say yes again.
Yeah.
Get written documents done, get it to us from the department saying that their lobbyists saying everything is...
It's funny because I on my speech on the floor of the Senate before we passed it in the House, I said, and DOT supports this legislation. Well, that afternoon I got an email from DOT saying, we do not support the legislation, and we testified that we do not oppose it. I said, okay, I'll clarify that in my next remarks.
next one's the land bank bill. You'll remember that was the extension.
Are we going to try the fee one again? Or are we going to give up on that one?
We don't need to decide today because we're going to come back. Well, you can decide whatever you want today.
We'll reapprove it again in September.
The fee one,
But
I like that one because
the reality is the fee
you got to keep trying.
But the fee one has a tough. Road
to go. About
but it's one of those ones from a local government.
16,
from a local government perspective, I like it because it points out some of what we have to deal with, which is here's a state mandate, and at the local level, you adopt a fee on your constituents to pay for it, but we're not going to pay it at the state.
But we'll exempt ourselves.
Like, come on.
Mark, I've got the notes to you. 16 was the fee, 17 is the flexibility.
Oh,
I should have put that on there, but I've got the notes, and when we come back, it'll be more specific. The land banks was the extension. That bill passed, so it'll go away.
We're
leaving it here to remind you.
That was the final hour
The other one is the economic development tax But you'll remember we've referred to this as the Axel Swanson Memorial Act.
Yeah.
It's, again, it's
hey, got, it's failed twice now, right?
$5 million a year if we get it passed.
And therein lies the problem, is it is a fiscal hit to the state. I think you should leave it on. I think it's worth discussing.
We just keep asking for
we'll
it.
We'll keep
trying. Allies are all the outbearing counties, they all support it.
Well, you got to remember, most of them are already getting it.
It depends on our language, so we've changed it a little bit. But basically, where we ended up was with just changing a few words in the statute. Where if we just changed a few words in the Rural Economic Development Statute to say any county bordering a state without a sales tax would be in the program, that would be us. I think we have wonderful arguments for why we do. So basically, the way this operates is we pay sales tax to the state, just as we normally do. This law was enacted to recognize those rural counties, but by rural, what they mean is those counties that have difficulty raising revenue for economic development purposes. So,
right.
For instance, when I was in Cowlitz County, we got some of our sales tax back to go to specific economic development infrastructure because we didn't have a large urban area to raise revenue. Well, so what we're up against up there is they look at us and they say, you're really urban. Come on, give me a break. You don't deserve to be in this program. But when you show to them and prove them how much sales tax leakage we have, we are very much like a rural county in the way that an ability we have to raise sales tax because we lose so much. And so once we show them the graphs and the pie charts and they start to understand that, I think they really understand there would be a significant benefit to us being in this program based on the criteria and why the other counties are in it. And like I said, it would be about a $5 million return every year for economic development infrastructure. And what I'd like to do this year with the pitch, Jeff's here, maybe he can chime in, but you know, we're going to come up on this transportation package potentially. We don't have enough money for 179th. The state is not, they're not going to say they have enough money for 179th. But if we could tie our pitch for this sales tax credit for economic development back into that infrastructure, show them what, you know, our partners are doing up there on the private side, get some of our private partners to say, this is what we could do. Mm-hmm. Because what this allows you to do is bond it. You could get, it's good for 25 years. You got $5 million coming in for 25 years. You could bond half of it and do 179th or half of it, partner with the state, something. So anyhow, I think I've got some creative ideas for how to maybe approach it better this year with the private sector and with, you know, we've always approached it from a general sense. I want to go up there this year with a plan and say, if you help us with this, this is what we'll do, and we'll meet you halfway.
Local matches always help. Yeah. And you're saying the private stuff, because there's private skin in the game and there's local skin in the game. That always helps the arguments in Olympia, just in a broader sense. But, yeah.
So, anyways.
That sounds good. Okay.
So what you're doing, you're trying to show through the escape of the sales tax, the people going across the river shopping, buying cars, buying furniture,
The card sales tax is recouped when you register.
Right.
But if you buy appliances and you put them in the back of your vehicle and bring them home, you don't pay sales tax then.
Yeah. But if you look at all these people driving around over here with their real license plates on, mm-hmm. I mean, it's 30% of the people in Carr County. So the state needs to...
Drives me crazy when I see that.
We lose a lot of revenue.
So do you support the idea of making sure we can capture that leakage?
Okay, that'll stay on. And again, like Commissioner Mielke said, we'll revisit it in the fall for sure. I put I-502 on there. You'll remember we had discussions about harmonizing. You guys have had all kinds of issues with your medical community here, and now that the recreational stuff is starting, we had discussions about that. There were some bills to harmonize the new law with the medical side. Those things didn't pass. They got close this year. Another part of that is direct money from the state to deal with the law enforcement judicial side of this. I don't know if you caught, interestingly, someone has sued in the city of Wenatchee.
We
talked about that earlier.
Okay, so you guys are up to speed on that and what that could do to the whole thing.
I don't know anything about it.
Go ahead. So where we are right now with this is we have a ban in place for collective gardens, which is on the medical marijuana side. Collective gardens is what's being used around the state as sort of a dispensary for card holders for marijuana for medical reasons.
We banned those in unincorporated Clark County. We just came off of our hearing last week, week before. We put a zoning code in place for I-502, which is recreational marijuana uses, growing, distribution, and retail.
Excellent. Sorry, is the one the what you just put in place virtually the same as what the city of Wenatchee has?
I've got to check that.
Okay, but it's close.
Effectively, Pierce, it bans. If it
more like Pierce.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they have a ban. We have a ban. I don't know if the language is the same.
We don't use the word ban. We passed the ordinance so that
that's true.
We will accept if it was not on the federal
so long as the feds deal. Yeah.
Until it's legal, we will not accept applications.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So we have a caveat in there. So that's where we are right now. We're not accepting any applications for either medical or recreational uses of marijuana in the county. Now, what's going on, I think, legislatively, Senator Rivers had a bill, 5887, which would have brought the Medical Cannabis Act, which is a totally different set of statutes, which was started by a citizen initiative in 1998. It would have brought that within the I-502 statutes. I can't remember the RCW off the top of my head. But it would have folded them together to give us a coherent mechanism for regulation. Right now, they're kind of just out there doing two different things from two different sets of RCWs and totally different rules. Personally, and I think we went there with the board. I mean, I was pretty supportive of that bill because it would have made it much simpler for all cities and counties, regardless, to understand how to regulate the two together. It would have folded them all under the Liquor Control Board. They would have regulated both the medical side, the recreational side, licensing, and all that stuff. So that was, I thought, a pretty good bill. It didn't pass. I think it had some support. The other big question that's going to come up again, at least it should from us as local governments, is I-502, the initiative, when it passed into law and currently leaves local government out of the revenue scheme altogether. We don't get any local funding other than we can apply through the health department for some grants, but it doesn't kick back any of the tax money on marijuana to local governments for safety or anything. So we made that ask, I think, this last session. We didn't get real far. Part of that conversation was, I think, the whole don't ban it and you can have some revenue type of thing. So,
and believe me, there is a faction of legislators.
The bill put a 75% tax on it.
Yeah.
And that's why I voted against it, not because of the tax, but because not a penny of that 75% tax came to the counties. And the counties have to implement it. The police department, the sheriff's department, I mean, and you have a 75% tax, and the county didn't get a penny.
Yeah. Is that how they're going to close the McCleary gap?
Well, they're hoping for a chunk. They wouldn't book any revenue projections. There was an effort by the House to book to include it in their budget, if I remember right. Their original budget included marijuana revenue speculatively. And the Senate said no and didn't do it.
Implementation around the state's kind of spotty, isn't it?
But, yeah, we'll see. And then, you know, if this the article on the Wenatchee thing, what I read is true, and we'll carry out the rest of what happened in Wenatchee then.
Well, and we talked a little bit about it. I'm going to go check it out. But the point is, my understanding is, there has been a lawsuit filed against the city of Wenatchee for their ordinance that bans recreational marijuana.
Yes.
So I-502 as an initiative and now a law is going to get played out in the courts as to whether or not local governments can or cannot ban it.
Can I refine that a little bit? That case basically is similar to our case in that Wenatchee said, we will grant the permits as soon as marijuana is removed from the controlled substances list. That's exactly the position that we have.
Right.
That's exactly what's being sued there. So that's the common link here. So that will have a lot to do with our with
right.
us and Pierce.
And from what I read, the courts will like to take this on.
So, and what it means is that, you know, we could fight that individually. We could fight it here. We fight it up there. We're looking at taking the fight up there and be part of the fight up there.
We'll fight to get a direct distribution to local governments.
Now,
it is, and believe me, there is a faction of legislators on both sides of the aisle. It's kind of all over the place that think, it's a crude way to describe it, but I almost say pay for play. Like, you got to allow recreational to get money in. What they don't understand is, and legislators don't always understand this, local governments, counties especially, you're doing so much on criminal justice that the way the initiative did, it essentially decriminalized it. So it did away with all the misdemeanors. And if they're not misdemeanors, they're ending up in your court system anyway. I don't know. Does the city of Vancouver have a municipal court? I don't know if they do or not.
No, so, they come to ours.
So they don't anyway. So you get them all anyway.
Well, they
if they're juvenile, they're in your court system anyway. And then if they break a, if they do something big and they're in, inside, living there for a week or two, then you're paying for that. And so there's arguments to be made that even if you don't allow it, the sale in your unincorporated area, you're still dealing with the judicial side of it. You have, you have a ways to go with that argument, though. There are key legislators on both sides of the aisle. Interestingly enough, the Wenatchee case, one of the leaders on this that was the lead, one of the leaders of the pay-for-play, again, a crude way to describe it, but was a man named Kerry Condotta. He's a House member, and he represents Wenatchee, interestingly enough. I don't, the irony there just hit me. But anyway, we'll see how – but the court system, that's going to play itself out. I still think we need to make the argument –
Well, that, we need to think through what that means anyways, because if the court system plays itself out and says, yes, local governments, you do have the right and ability to ban I-502 uses in your jurisdiction, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody in the state's going to. And – just because of the way our state works, you know, a majority of this what money that's going to be made is going to come from the Puget Sound area. So there's still going to be a lot of tax revenue made from jurisdictions who choose not to ban it.
I also know that your Association of Counties and the Association of Cities, the leadership of those groups have begun to talk. They talked late last year. And frankly, WASAC was much ahead of AWC in terms of how to deal with this. AWC is kind of all over the place with their own membership. But to come up with a local government ask for this, because I don't think you'll be successful if you go in there and pick a fight and say, county should get 80, cities 20, 70, 30, whatever the split is. I think that local government in general is going to be better off if they're all singing off the same sheet of music in terms of what that'll work, and how that money should be brought back. So, you know, it's on there because this issue's not going away. Just wanted to make sure that we're still looking at this and monitoring it.
To summarize what this bill is, right now, any sales tax collected by marijuana, all of it goes to the states, yet it's the local jurisdictions that are going to have to deal with the court cases in the jail,
right.
All the justice system having to do with that. So we're just saying, if you're going to collect it, with the purpose for that collection is to or take that and support the local jurisdictions to put it to use to handle the consequences. So that's basically the summary of it, right?
Innocent, yeah. And then the other bills, too, the harmonization of the medical. I mean, this is just kind of a placeholder for all of that whole issue together. So.
The big argument on that is that medical is not taxed and recreational will be. So the fear is everyone's going to claim medical when they're selling the stuff so they don't have to pay the tax. Mm-hmm. And so to eliminate that, they wanted to try to put it all into one neat package that would make it clear whether it's medical or not and so
that,
on. So
that wouldn't affect us until it affected the ordinance that we put in place, and that's legalized by the federal government.
I think the main thing for the county is the revenue.
Then we would want our share. Yeah. But along those lines, one time before we talked about this also, and I think I don't know if we actually tried to move legislation or if we just went for a legal opinion, and that is we talked about the judicial system and that we pay for that, and then we get 15%, I think, of the city property tax for the judicial system, and then the city has the ability to give tax exemptions for 15, 20 years, and that helps us support the cases that go on from the city, and yet we have no say-so in the exemption of property tax that they gave.
Mm-hmm.
And we either talked about that, or we talked about drafting legislation to say if you want to give the exemption, they have to get us to buy off.
They have to notify
or
us.
Or they go ahead and they can only exempt their portion of it, and we still get our 15% to pay for the
it's a I can't remember what they call it, but I've researched this, and we did do the legislation. I think it was maybe 2 years ago. But it's like urban redevelopment something. And so when they designate a zone in their incorporated area, and it's urban revitalization something, they can then give property tax exemptions to help, you know, get a project going to revitalize that. That exemption does cut into the revenue we would normally receive,
and there's no
communication required. So we at one time looked into that, and we're going to ask that, you know, we at least be notified, if not given a vote on.
I don't know that it ever got to me, though. I don't remember this one.
Yeah,
I don't think you guys ever brought it to me.
But the exemption could be whatever they have coming in, but our
it's our portion remains.
No different than the state giving away your sales tax authority, in a sense. Yeah,
I've got that though, and I can find it.
We were mandated to add judges here in the last couple of years, and had to dip it out of our general fund. So,
okay.
Could I ask a question? Since you've been lobbying this, guys, you've been talking about it, I have not been too much involved in it. You say medical marijuana and also for recreational use. When does the product become a commercial product?
When does the recreational side start?
Well, the whole thing. When is
they're starting.
When does it all become a commercial?
It's an interesting question. So, when the Medical Cannabis Act was amended by Governor, by the legislature, then Governor Gregoire, it became commercial in a sense because it had this clause in it where it allowed for collective gardens. 10 of us could get together, have 45 plants. And the way that's been interpreted, if you go up to Puget Sound, or if you drive home with me, I can show you two of these places with the green cross, is that I've got a collective garden. I can have 45 plants, or up to, I think it's 72 usable ounces. Somebody comes into my shop, they're now part of my collective. They give me a donation, and I give them, they show me their card, and I give them their marijuana. So on the medical side, for a few years now, there's been sort of this commercial nature to it since the law changed. Whether or not that's all legal, that's up to the courts, and actually it's been through court and to the Court of Appeals right now. The retail side on I-502 is starting to come into place. Licenses have been issued to the state for growing. The lottery's been done for retail. And so I suspect within, you know, the next 3 to 6 months, you're going to start to see the first retail storefronts open up and legally sell legally grown, tested marijuana for recreation in Washington.
By the end of the year, I'll imagine you'll have a retail store open down here somewhere.
But you could own, an operation in Wenatchee, they could own an operation in Clark County, they could own one in Seattle?
No, there's some limitations on how much you can own. You can't be a grower.
A common owner.
You can't be a grower. There's three tiers to it. There's grower, then kind processor, of manufacturer, processor, distributor, processor, and then retailer. You can only be one at a time. They put some limits on the amount of grow that you can do. They put some square footage limits on that.
You have to have been screened and licensed by the state to do it.
So you can't be a cartel.
Right.
So if an individual, it wouldn't seem to be any different than cigarettes being sold commercially, or whether it's liquor being sold commercially. If it's a commercial product that's being sold statewide, then the sales tax revenue should come back to right here. Come back to you.
That's right.
That's what we've been arguing.
So, well, we'll make that. Continue to make that case. I think, Mark, I can tell you got staff out there, so I probably should get done here. None of these are new. You got Chillachi, and I've talked to Jeff about strategies to get more money for funding from the state. He just mentioned to me today about getting it on some other lists, and we'll keep working forward on that. I don't know how much discussion we need to have about that unless you all want to talk more about it.
We're still asking for grants to develop that railroad corridor.
And maybe even direct distributions from the legislature beyond the grants. The CDM services was the capital budget project that we supported. This is that, is it right to call it an adult family day center or adult day center?
It's for respite care.
Is that the right way to describe it?
We went toward it.
They will be back next year. I think this is that Mike Wilson's project that Mike Wilson's involved in. Again, it didn't get funded because there was no capital budget this year. So, not knowing, assuming there'll be a capital budget next year, if that's a county priority or not, we'll keep.
So, give us a summary of what that is?
This was the one, their request was for about $1.3 million, I think, $1.5 million for the state for a capital budget grant for CDM services. And they would rebuild. They would rebuild or remodel. You have the exact narrative there, Axel.
It's the Aging with Dignity Capital Campaign, and it's going to provide adult daycare, adult day home care, and other supportive services. So I actually went and toured this place, and I think maybe you've been there, Christopher. It's right up, I think it's right up off of Main Street. But it's a small place for what they try to do. But basically, it's a place where folks can come in, drop off someone that they help take care of, and they can then themselves go run errands, do other things. But it's a real kind of neat community center feel. But they want to move it to a bigger space because they've got some other funding coming in for expanded programs and different things that they can do, but they just don't have the footprint and the space downtown. They work very tight with Area Agency on Aging. That's one of the places.
Also, David Kelly was for CDBG funds.
It's a good question. My assumption is they probably would have looked. Well, yes, home funds. I have to look into that. I don't know if they. I don't. I got to look at this to see if.
Well, and I'll check with Mike Wilson to see if something's changed with that. If they're still going.
Yeah.
Oh, they're still going.
Are they? Okay.
There'll be an additional request this year. The Salvation Army also wants.
Yeah,
but
so basically, these are Clark County nonprofits that are asking the state. We're supporting their ask to the state to be funded.
Right. Yes.
We had done
the capital budget that is made available to nonprofits.
We did the Children's Center a couple years ago that got funded.
Aging and disability, and much of they get referrals from the Area Agency on Aging and Disability. So those clients that qualify for those services could qualify to come here and get
support.
The next one on, if there is a transportation package, you'll remember last year you all signed off on a letter that had a list of local projects, and there were. Your priority within that list was 179th and 10th.
Yeah.
I also put local distribution on there because that was a discussion point within a transportation funding package that there would be a direct distribution to local government for M&O. That's, and we'll revisit this stuff in the fall.
For roads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I'll keep working with Axel.
Well, we need to get dialed in because if it happens, we don't want to be caught flat-footed. We want to say this is what we need, and this is part of our plan at the county and our package. And it's,
I believe we have place from last year.
Well, we've got some good stuff in place, and we actually took some really good strides this winter as things ramped up to because you know I don't want to go into it, but we had to do a big shift from where we were even last year to where we are now because 179th. 10th Avenue, St. John's, Barberton, that all became our priority and our focus now. And we had to adjust some of our plans because a lot of times the state's not going to hand you a bunch of cash for something that's not your top priority on your plan. So we needed to adjust some of that stuff. But we did a lot of good work, but we need to get it very dialed in for this year.
Mr. Chair, if I could be excused, I need to go to another meeting.
Thank you.
So I'll keep coordinating with Axel and Jeff about just other things that come up. I'll also coordinate with Axel and then in turn with you, Mark, from some of your other department heads if there's just other stuff floating around that they care about and want us to change, and we'll bring that back to you all again in the fall, and then we'll formalize and do that meeting again with all the legislators. So,
yeah, we meet with everybody, all the department heads and elected officials, usually in late
or
August,
Thursday.
September, but we meet with them specifically on legislative ideas, we'll do that again.
So probably what we have to do is go back and renew our agreement with all the other local governments on the priority of projects.
On the transportation list?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why anything would have changed, but yeah, that'll come up between now and
just
the fall.
Just reassure.
Sure.
Yeah. And we have time to do that. So come September, it's a done deal, and we're on track.
Yeah. That's all.
Okay.
So contact me anytime you want.
Okay.
I'll leave you be.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, for sure. We'll be in touch. Thanks, Axel.
Yeah, good to see you, Mike.
Good luck.
Congratulations. Thanks, all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye, Commissioner. Good seeing
thank
you again.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. Before he comes back, we'll go back on to old business.
Sure.
Right.
for electrical workers and the National Electrical Contractor Association. I remember those guys up at the legislature all the time. That's on the commission I run into.
That's great. So we ran through.
Hi there.
Hello. How are you?
Are you Delaney?
The man, the mystery, the legend.
How are you?
Great. Dave Fuller.
Yeah, I go over and work out with Heath.
It's working.
I think I'm going to have the temperature dial down in here a little bit.
Which one do you guys want to start with?
I don't care. Whichever one you feel.
Let's do the putting me on the RFP thing first.
Okay.
I think that hopefully will be quicker than it's less difficult to explain than the other.
So, you want to wait for Mark to get back?
Yeah, we.
As you walked in the door.
What'd you
say? We were debating waiting for you.
I'll clue you in later.
To wait or not to wait. Dave and Taylor are here. They've got two things. The first thing deals with the ambulance contract, EMS contract, RFP, I guess is the better way.
Yeah, I think the last time we met, we were in the process of working through with the city and getting that RFP out on the streets. It's currently out on the streets. We had a pre-bid conference, had three potential bidders show up at that mandatory conference.
Any surprises there?
No, not really. I mean, kind of the players that we anticipated.
Two local, one from outside the region?
Two local, and one's up in Seattle, but they're actually a large international company. Falk Ambulance had showed up. So their bids, they actually asked for an extension to the process. So originally their bids were due back today. They've given them a two-week extension, and so the bids are due back on June 19th. As part of the review process, the consultant is bringing in a group of outside industry experts to help review those RFPs and contracts. There's going to be a couple people from the city, and then we've asked to have one person from EMS District 2 involved in that review process. Mm-hmm. From all of our perspectives, we're trying to make it so that it's not somebody that has a direct relationship with any of our current contract or with our current contractor, but is knowledgeable in that area. Axel asked me why I can't do it. It's because I have a direct relationship with that contractor. But talking with the fire chiefs and trying to identify an individual, we would like to recommend that Axel actually fill in that role on behalf of EMS District 2. He doesn't have a direct relationship with AMR. He has been involved with the process as we work through this, and we think he would be a good person to go ahead and have sit on that committee. Ultimately, those decisions and how that RFP plays out will be brought back to you guys as part of the EMS District 2 board. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But we wanted to kind of...
Sounds good.
Yeah, what's the time involved?
Well, it will depend on how many bids they actually get back. Yeah. But essentially, it's probably a few hours on a couple different days. One for obviously reading the RFPs and then getting together as a group to help score them. And then if they do an oral presentation, he'd obviously
sit
in
and help evaluate. Some of that he can do at night.
Yeah, Mark's okay with that.
From 5 to 12.
Exactly. But I've been working on this project with Dave for a couple months. Obviously, I appreciate it because apparently I haven't made the chiefs mad at me or anything, so I've been doing
there.
So they're happy. But I'd be happy to do it and look them over. Like Dave said, we bring everything back anyways to the district. So.
Great.
Yeah.
You good?
Okay. That's the first one.
Okay.
Right. Taylor's here to talk excise.
The other
Dave's gonna handle it.
Thing that we have is we have an agreement with the Department of Revenue at the state that collects the excise tax on the 911 side, on the E911 side for That 70 cents per phone line per month, it's collected at the state. Mm-hmm. This last year they made changes to the RCW associated with that tax, specifically adding language as it relates to how prepaid phone cards and prepaid lines are taxed. All of the rest of them are taxed by the carrier, or the carrier actually mm-hmm. pays the tax. Prepaid phone cards are not really administered by the carrier, so they had to kind of write language specific to that.
Kind of a loophole they're closing.
Yes. And so rather than it coming from the carrier, it actually comes from the point of sale. And so in order to get our local ordinance in line with the new RCW and to make sure that we're in line with what the agreement says with the Department of Revenue, we're actually asking that we make that change to the ordinance to add the language that's in line with the...
I didn't want to pay the 70 cents to start with, so I have someone else helping me.
So are you a county? That's a state thing.
It is a state thing. There's a there's a county ordinance as well that's yeah, kind of a mirror of the state RCW.
So basically our ordinance would... we have one now. So
we have one now.
Is that their policy is our policy.
Correct. And so what we've asked is that we just add the language in there that talks okay. about the prepaid phone cards. Currently we have wireline, wireless, and VoIP. And then this just kind of closes that loop on the prepaid okay. phone
any
cards.
Any idea what increase in revenues that will generate?
It's about $20,000 a month right now is what it looks like. They just started in January of this year collecting that.
Okay.
It's going to take a little while for that to kind of sift its way out sure. so that we really know what's prepaid and what's mm-hmm. coming from the other side. But at least the 3 months that I was able to look like it was running right about $20,000, which is about 6% of our...
That's the total, that's total collected?
On prepaid.
Yeah. On prepaid only.
So...
Okay. So is that something that the state law needs to change first?
The state law has already changed.
No, we're going to bring our ordinance
and
we're with their.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this goes. We'll have this on the consent agenda, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So this is just an advance.
And they go together. There's two points of action. One's to update the ordinance, and the other is to sign
the agreement
with the Department of Revenue.
Department.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay. So you're on it.
So we'll get this to Rebecca and get it.
Excellent.
We truly understand it's going to be on the consent agenda.
It's coming. Soon.
Short and sweet.
You're ready.
No problem.
In summary. It'll be there.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Good catch.
Mark's
yeah.
They had a long night last night.
I'm in the studio.
Yeah, you've been here.
I haven't until now.
Oh, okay.
I will.
Thanks.
I didn't see
Taylor,
you slip in.
Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, Marty, okay. You're just too transparent.
We're rolling.
It's that
Marty.
Haircut. You just
right by you. Superman. Oh, he is invisible. Oh, yeah.
Marty.
Okay, well, Marty's here to talk about, some time ago we had a pretty vigorous discussion about wineries and their failure to comply with code, and
let me put him in charge.
Yeah, and Marty started wielding his big enforcement bat, and then he was sort of pulled back, and he entered into agreements with these wineries to come into compliance, and he's here to report on
okay.
progress.
Okay. And Chris will be joining us in just a moment here. Okay. So I know Commissioner Medora is familiar with these names because I think when we sent something out at the end of last year, we had a follow-up meeting with mm-hmm. folks in the back conference room. Mm-hmm. So we had Confluence, Vineyards, Hyacinth House, Molten Falls, and Olaclaw.
She's
up to
Rusty
Grape has been a case that we've been actively working on, and I'll kind of take that as a sidebar because I have some other things to report on.
Oh, hey, Mark. Another transparent person. She's right here.
Did we do one of these?
Yeah. He's gotten lost looking for two people.
He's gotten two for two here.
Yeah.
Marty was the first one.
When Chris comes in,
can I go home? I'm not being very effective.
You're marketing transparency really well.
It's like...
When Chris comes in, he'll verbally announce.
That's right. Hey, Mark, I'm here.
So
I'll talk about these four wineries, and then I'll talk about Rusty Grape. So the four wineries that we've been dealing with, Olaqua was this small winery, and they've made efforts and are very close or in compliance. We just needed to assure, I think, an ADA parking space, and then they have a porta potty, and public health has bought off on that. So they're just some loose ends to tie up with them. Confluence, Hyacin, and Moulton Falls, those three. Now, when we had this meeting in January, I urged these folks to meet with us individually to figure out where were they in compliance. I mean, how much of a building are we talking about? What kind of permits? Because they're all different. They're all unique. And we met with them individually over the course of January, and I think maybe a bit into February. The letter was, please have your stuff together by May 30, because that's really the start of the season. And to date, Moulton Falls, they've come in with plans, so they're being reviewed. I talked to the plans examiner. He says there needs to be a little bit more work done on the plan review, and then they'll be able to issue permits. And this is after the fact, by the way. Moulton Falls and Hyacin House, we don't have anything on file. Nothing has been submitted. I know that Greg Weber, who is the proprietor of Confluence, he has been working with an engineer to look at his building that he is in. We have, in our routine fashion, we have provided a notice and order to these folks that you've not complied, that we would otherwise, if we don't have an appeal from them, we would maybe proceed with a lien on the property. They didn't appeal these because they knew that they had permits to get. So our next step would be to say, look, we've given you until May from January. We've worked with you. Mm-hmm. In some cases, we've done a lot of feeding and caring of applicants, and we've not seen anything. So my next course of action would be to file a lien on the property. That usually gets their attention.
Is that reversible? If it serves its purpose, then you can back up and say, okay.
Yes.
But if they don't respond, then it becomes real.
So here's how we deal with liens as well. So there's a lien that we actually file. So there's a recording fee goes on their property. There are daily penalties that accrue. And then once we remove the lien because they've complied with the underlying requirement, then there's a fee to, there's a, actually we release the recording. So there are two charges on the front end and the back end. Right. And then what we've done typically is we don't go after them for the thousands of dollars. We just say, how much time have we spent in doing an inspection, making a phone call, having a couple letters, maybe doing a reinspection. So we recover our administrative costs, and it could be a few hundred bucks. Mm-hmm. We release the lien, and they go about their way. But it is something that if they try to sell their property or get financing, they need to clean this lien up. Nobody's gonna sell without this lien being removed. Nobody's gonna get financing without this being removed. So it's an incentive.
Yes, an incentive, and it sounds like it's necessary in some of these situations. I'm curious though, if they actually, and I'm glad Chris you're here to answer this, if they actually incur penalties, a lien, mm-hmm. to collect for non-performance, how can we forgive that without it being considered a gift of public funds?
The code gives the county the authority to negotiate those, and because it's a disputed amount, you have the authority, or the director has the authority to negotiate. And historically, we've been across the board. Prior boards have required 10%. They would not go below 10% because it was intended to ensure that you provide deterrence for people who have similar violations. It was intended to compensate the public and the county for the cost of getting people to come into compliance. We've had the actual cost. Some of them depended on how willful they were versus inadvertent situations like parents who let their kids stay home and the kids trash the house or trash the property with garbage. We've seen all those different kinds. But there have been different approaches, and the answer to your question is you absolutely have the right to negotiate, and the philosophy you adopt or the policy you implement is really up to you.
Okay, so it's a tool, and we do have the flexibility to back it out.
Yes.
Because we don't want to hurt these businesses, but we do want to make sure that they are properly motivated to follow the law. We're obligated to make sure that everybody follows the law, equal application.
Yes. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that, because if we don't see any progress, I'd say within the next days, then we're gonna
and we're gonna
let them know.
Touch bases with them to make sure they know what's in the works.
Yeah. Question: this is only a one-step process if you're talking about a lien.
Well, what happens? I'm sorry, that you weren't done with your question, I assume.
Okay, the part that I was going to bring in the business I used to work in. You'd send a cease and desist to them first, letting them know if they don't comply, then you would follow up with a lien that's going to cost them money.
Right. What we do is if we know of a violation, we usually do a soft call or a letter, and if the violation continues, then we actually send what's called a notice of violation and an order to comply.
Okay.
If they don't appeal, then we send a letter saying we intend to file a lien, and we give them a little bit more time. And if after that they don't comply, come in with their applications, then we file the lien. So we give them a soft, and then a notice and order, and then we intention to lien, and then a lien. So we've given them like four steps.
So this is a published document that goes out that everybody is aware of, that this is the steps that you go through. So any future wineries that start up are...
Well, I don't think any of these should be too surprised. I mean, we've been working with all of these for...
None of these are
working with long.
No, it's
year.
Been a long time process. Does your department have any objection to my making a friendly call from the commissioner's office saying, heads up, the train's leaving the station?
You call all the way.
All right.
Yeah.
Marty. That would be the one more step. It's the Emma stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm ready to help you.
You're the frustration relief department.
Yeah.
You're
all I would say, Commissioner.
Ready. It's coming.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say, Commissioner, is that if we've been accused of anything by the courts, historically, it's because the county drags its feet. And that's usually because we work with homeowners a lot. We spend that give and take, that it's soft notice often takes weeks, because they'll say, we're going to do it. It's good. One more week.
I really
and then finally we'll issue the notice and order. And if they don't appeal, there's a time period. It's not just like today. They have a month to appeal or 14 days. And then then it becomes final. And then we say, okay, look, now you're subject to penalties.
Sure, you don't want to
appeal. This is final. So we've gone all that on these already.
Okay. Just
Marty,
so we're only talking about...
When we start off on this, it's really important that we start in January and have it done before the season.
Right.
And they were supposed to be all up to speed before the season.
Yeah.
We're in the season.
Yes.
Actually,
so how much more time?
We actually started before January.
Yeah, we started last year.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Over a year ago. And this is what I'm hearing from all the people who are in
compliance.
And they're competing with these people who are not in compliance, and they're threatening lawsuits.
It's not fair
for us, as you said, for us not following through. So I think it's very important that we clamp down. And so. The point I was going to is, what do we do to shut the door?
Well, I was going to mention that in a very egregious case where somebody is using a building and we have no information on that building whatsoever, no permits, no plans, no inspections, no nothing, and they're using it for public assembly. In one case, we've said, don't use the building. And if they use the building, then maybe we go as far as we're going to have you post it for no occupancy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just don't know if this building is going to be something that is designed and built for public assembly, for commercial use.
But I think that we're past that. I think that we're up to where we're dealing with these people. We're aware.
That means cutting the power off.
Of all, well, we can't do that. That's Clark PUD's thing.
But you can
you can post it. No occupancy.
Yeah, you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, you can post the building that it's not legal to even occupy. Right. You can prevent them from using the building if you gave us that direction.
Electricity.
Anna, when you call them, tell them to listen to this recording.
Marty. Clarification.
Yeah.
You mentioned Olaqua, Confluence, Hyson, and Moulton.
Yeah.
You said Olaqua is very close.
Yeah.
We know Confluence has been working real close with Jim Muir, so they're close. At least they brought their plans in for review.
No, Moulton House. Yeah, Moulton House.
Confluence.
Confluence has not submitted anything. Moulton Falls has.
Oh, I just heard from Jim a couple days ago that said that there was a mix-up in the computer and they have submitted their plans.
Moulton Falls.
Was that Moulton?
Yes.
Is that Joe?
Joe Malay, yes.
Okay, excuse me, I got those two confused.
That's right.
So, of the ones that, so Olaqua is close, Moulton is close, so it's Confluence and Hyson that you're having trouble with?
So we have Confluence and Hyson House. So those are the two that we don't have any really plans with.
So are they the ones getting caught in this net and the other two are going to, you're okay with them? Or?
Well, Moulton Falls I'm not sure about. I mean, the plans were just submitted. In fact, I saw Joe Malay earlier this week, might have been Monday, submitting plans. So... the plan review has to take place, and whether there's any deficiencies or not remains to be seen. And those are people I don't review the plans.
So
that we
what
have
what I'm getting at is I don't want to make any phone calls and misspeak here. Before I do, I want you to tell me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
who
it's almost a triage process.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they've submitted plans.
Yes.
You don't want a phone call
made.
Want
to scare people. I just checked this just at 1 o'clock. No plans submitted for Confluence, no plans submitted for High School.
So they're the ones that get the calls.
So those are the two. It's like, get on the stick.
If the plans miss the boat entirely, they get a call.
Yeah.
Okay.
And your action on those today will be what?
If we don't see anything between now and the end of the week, I'll file a lien.
Today's Wednesday.
I'll file a lien Monday.
You get a call them?
Well, I think Anna's going to call
them. So I assume you two will be communicating.
Yeah, we can communicate.
Okay. The good news on this is that sounds like all the rest of them have complied.
Yeah, they're in process.
They're in process.
Did Rusty Grape owe us something?
I was going to talk about Rusty Grape separate
because they have the sound issue.
They have had a notice and order, and in fact, we've liened their property. They have permits they've had applications submitted, plans submitted, and reviewed and approved. They need to pick up their permits. So I think some of it is, it may be some, these are permits that were in well before. Last May, June.
Paid,
so they need to pay for their permits. And this has been an extended code enforcement case. They'll need to settle up on their liens, which will be, there's some additional administrative costs that we've borne because we've had to pay special attention to Rusty Grape.
And one thing to clarify, it's not just a matter of picking up permits. Some of these buildings, they very likely will require some improvements in. So they've got to comply, not just get the permit, but comply with the provisions of the permit.
Do the work authorized by the permit.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's
building
codes. They've got to improve their buildings.
You said you'd be filing a lien on Monday. I thought there was two other steps before that.
We've already done those steps.
We've given them notice.
We're 6 months into this.
Well, I know, but I thought I heard that there was one more step before that, but no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Rusty Grape, we have been out monitoring for noise.
Mm-hmm.
I think last week even, we had staff out there, and we've also been talking to the neighbor, Mr. Syverson, and mm-hmm. things have been settled down a bit, strangely enough.
Okay.
So... Do
we have a monitor out there?
Yep.
Or we just go out there and check it from time to time, or do we leave an apparatus there?
We have to have somebody with the apparatus.
Okay.
I saw the box. We got the new monitoring things downstairs, so they have a handheld.
And they've been trained in the whole nine yards.
And these are surprise, unannounced visits, and they.
Well, that's the rule of thumb is when he sees you show up, they turn it down.
But they try to approach in a clandestine way, and uh-huh. it's not like, hey, here we are, so that you go turn your stereo down.
There is an event that Rusty Grape has planned for June 21,
uh-huh.
And there's some some anxiety over that. So we'll be out there June 21 and making some, and, you know, making some.
And they'll be in compliance for the event.
They have to be, no.
You mean from a sound point of view?
And you understand, and you understand that.
If they don't, then you know, it's it's very clear, it's very black and white. It's in a very kind of pointed 1, 2, 3, 4 step, and it's in pretty plain English.
See, along the way, we've been somewhat at fault here because we haven't really established a real hard rule of thumb, and they've been stringing us along, and so it's really important that. To be on both sides of the issue and knowing that there's a possible civil lawsuit out there now over the fence issue.
And just quickly, before we re-engaged last fall, it was late September when you guys were looking at the ordinance to adopt the amendments.
Yeah.
It became effective October. I came to you and said, here's how we would enforce the code, whether they're dragging their feet on initial application, and it's kind of the step that I talked about earlier, notice and order and lien. And then if they're operating, so Rusty Grape, fully operational, permits in hand, or any other that's permits in hand, if they violate some of the standards, what we would do. That's the step that we're at now with we're holding Rusty Grape to a standard that we're assuming that they're a winery.
Yes.
So they have to live with the noise standards and the other standards. So we are monitoring that. We have the equipment and the staff
and
to do that work.
Mr. Syverson's main objection was the noise.
Correct.
And all along, from the very beginning, we said our standard is the state standard. And regardless of what process we were going through to adopt an ordinance, enforcement of the state standard was continuous that whole time.
So I just wanted to report on that.
Very good.
Because you might get a phone call or a visit.
Appreciate that.
Very good. Thank you.
All right.
Your department is doing very well. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is we got a joint BOCC and Commission on Aging meeting scheduled for Tuesday, June 17th at 4:30. There's interest in having that meeting televised by CBTV, and apparently the board has to approve that coverage. And so
that's fine with me. It doesn't cost us anything extra.
Is that a special meeting? Or
can we get a copy of the agenda or whatever they have?
Should have been attached to your...
Is this the normal commission meeting?
I believe it is.
And that's the one that we have different commissioners assigned to, and I think that's David's.
This is a governing board meeting?
Commission on Aging.
I think it's a special presentation, isn't it? Isn't that what I read? That they do the commissioners once a year?
Yeah, it looks like they're going to go over their
report to the
community. Well, it's an annual work plan.
Plan.
So there's no real action items other than to approve. Are there even any approvals?
Approval of minutes.
Sounds similar to what Deed did with you all today about talking about the things they've accomplished and where they want to go.
Okay, so there's no ask in this. No, there is no authorization to move forward on something. This is
there's
basically
no
informational. Yeah. Right?
Well, they're sharing their priorities.
So when it says approval of agenda, is this the agenda?
Yeah, probably.
So this is what's going to occur during the meeting. I believe that's.
Can you give us what they have prepared for this ahead of time?
It says annual.
I'll go down and talk to Jackie.
It must have more than this list.
I'll go talk to Jackie.
Annual work priorities.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
But okay to televise?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So I'm looking at two basic things, and that's a report to the community.
Yeah.
And then annual work plan priorities, which is a presentation before the board.
Yeah. So this is here in the hearing room, and CBTV is always there. And the way things that the way this works is that CBTV never charges us for anything here because basically
we pay them a
flat rate.
Yeah, it's a flat rate. So the more they televise for us, the better the deal.
More bang for your buck.
Turn on the lights, transparency.
Okay, very good. We'll get you...
What's the reason for the late authority?
Probably just when they normally meet.
Yeah.
No, I think we normally meet at 1 or 2 o'clock.
Why don't I get some more information from Colette and Jackie and we'll talk about it.
Well, it's already noticed at this point.
Probably.
Well, June 17 is enough time.
Honestly, this is my first exposure to this commission.
Probably ought to make sure that the time makes sense for everybody.
I
asked that question because it's extra time for staff.
Yeah.
Sure.
It would be nice to be able to do it during work hours. That's what their normal meetings are during work hours.
Well, it's supposed to wrap. Well, I see, yeah. In other words, wrap up by 5 normally, and this wraps up at 6.
It's at 6:30, yeah. Normally, we're done by 3 o'clock.
Well, for work sessions. But this is more than a work session. What do you call it?
It might be conflicting with something else. I'm not sure. It's a Tuesday. It's so we have a hearing in the morning and afternoon would probably be open.
Anything that they would adopt at this meeting here that would be sent back to the commission for approval?
No.
If they adopt anything in this meeting, it costs any money or anything?
We just sit on it.
Just sit on it?
We don't pay for it. We just sit on it.
But I mean, as far as if this
I don't have any
AG
conflict at all on the
is
schedule.
Requesting anything financial aid from the county,
no,
they don't do anything at all.
For that date,
no, we participate in it, and they get most of their money from
that's why they
from
picked
the
that time.
Government. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about CBTV.
Okay.
No, I'm talking
that's
about where the
commission
way for operation.
Oh, commission like agent. Yeah.
They kind of like lag.
Not
they get they get
nonprofit.
Yeah, they provide like home care.
Yeah.
And we're not providing any county funds.
Right. No, we just sit on the board.
Okay.
Okay, well, that exhausts the old. Now we're into commissioner reports.
Yeah, I don't have anything. I'm good.
Ed, do you have anything that you'd like to talk about? Or
no, just trying to get my feet on the ground and get signed up and find out where the office is at and parking place is at.
We'll hook you up.
The bank accounts and all.
there are no bank accounts.
No bank accounts.
Keys to the building.
If you have one.
Keys to the vault, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you'll need to give HR your bank account number.
She already asked me about that.
Squared away.
No clothing allowance.
So, Commissioner Mielke, you have anything?
I want to remind us of Animal Control to update their technology.
Yeah.
We saw with the health department has already done it, and the assessor's already done it. I'd like to have a progress report come in.
Actually, the assessor is on the front end of doing it. They haven't done it yet, and neither has the health department. They're moving that direction. So I've asked Jim Hominick, the application services department director, to get an iPad users group together.
I thought I understood the health department had that in place.
That was Joe Lexon. No. Are we working with him on that?
Well, they just hired their informatics person, and that person's mission is to get the iPads out and to convert paper processes to.
So we're going to draw from that.
I thought Joe already did.
Cool.
Congratulations.
There may have been some things done, but there is a whole lot left to do.
Well, I'd just like to have a project report because I haven't heard any advancement from Animal Control.
I
have one thing, Mr. Chairman. Every time we have the RTC meetings, and I don't know how many other meetings are used that room, but the sound system in there is really messed up.
Did you see that last night?
That was
why aren't they
really
using our
messed
system?
Messed up big time. And the cables across the floor and everything else.
So we put a work order in to fix it.
Yeah,
I think it was fixed about halfway through the meeting. Because we had all new microphones I shared with you.
And I had to help tear down that room for our next meeting to open it up. And I know that when I was working with CBTV, there's about half the mics that are theirs and half the mics that are ours.
Right.
So I don't know if that creates
I would think we are using, good point, we're using both of those rooms for work sessions, and we should have the same common equipment that we always use for work sessions and just simply provide a feed to CBTV when they want to record so that we're not having to do mix and match and something special set up.
Yeah, and they put a temporary box up there that has all kinds of static.
Yeah, they're not using our system.
Okay.
It's a workaround.
Well, we'll talk to Matt Ransom about that and the CBTV folks just to make sure that they're.
Yeah, I think they're not aware that there's already infrastructure there to use.
Yep.
I'd like to encourage you or staff to visit the youth house and see what I've been talking about. I've been checking on it periodically. It is full of storage. There's no room for meetings in there. And we have a place at the Dolly building that will work. And we also have a place downstairs in the Dolly building for storage. So apparently their storage demand is such that their living room is full. The dining room is full. I don't know where they're holding their meetings.
They're holding them in that lower level of the house for the most part. They open up the two doors and they have meetings in there.
What are they storing?
The
front window.
There's like 13 employees in there. So that's why the square footage at the Dolly building has been difficult. And there's some confidentiality issues. You know, they've got counseling that goes on there. They've got programs there. But anyways, we talked about the square footage and everything else there. There's two major concerns with the Dolly building. The first is that the square footage does not meet what they need for their programs, according to them. Now, you know, I'm not in a place to overrule their staff.
And that's reason I want you to go down and see what they are.
Well, I've been there lots of times.
I'm talking about I've been by there at least every week.
You go in the youth house and walk around?
I don't walk in anymore. I walked in the first time. I've driven by twice.
Well,
the stuff is piled up in the front window.
Well, I'm not going to vouch for their organizational skills, but why don't you and I go over there and look around, see what programs are there, who's sitting where, and why, and determine kind of once and for all, because they seem to really don't think that Dolly space would work. The other issue we have is that the realtor, remember, doesn't think we're going to be able to rent the space to anybody professional if we put a bunch of youth programs in there.
It's vacant.
I know.
We're spending.
But the existing tenants have told us if we put incompatible uses in that building, they will depart the building. We put activities in that building, Commissioner, that were inconsistent and incompatible, and we got nothing but gripes and complaints out of tenants, and we actually lost tenants because of that.
That was quite a while ago.
But it'll happen again. Yeah. So the space in the Dolly building is not contiguous. There's some here, there's some here, and there's some here.
We went down there and we visited the one that we looked at. It was much bigger than the living room and the facilities that they have. It's got the private individual offices that they liked, and their problem is storage.
Well, let's go confirm that. I don't want to just say that's a fact because I want to walk through there with you.
I know it's a fact.
Well, let's go.
I'll go with you. All right. When we get done with the meeting today, we'll go.
Okay.
I don't know anything about the storage, but I'm curious. What in the world are they storing? Maybe we should ask about. Do they
projects? They have projects. The kids talked about it here the other day. Some of the projects they use props for some of the things they do. So the point is that we're about $1.5 million in overhead, and we have a building that's probably 30% empty. That we're footing, and we're paying for some.
It's a Dolly building? No, we're at like 88% occupancy.
It's the main floor.
The entire building, we're at about 88% full.
The west end is empty. The big office on the main floor in the front is empty.
Yeah, that
and
was.
The big office in the back is empty, and several of the ones downstairs are empty. And those are the ones we're talking about for storage.
If storage is the need, that might be an option. But I think there's just not enough office space for the different programs
confidentiality.
Okay, this calls for you're not going to solve it here. Take a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
We haven't seen anything else come back on excess property.
We had an extensive work session. Staff was given guidance to do additional review on remaining parcels.
Okay.
And staff will be back to the board. Well, we just sold four surplus public works properties yesterday.
Four.
Well, they're really two. Three of them were on one.
There's two.
Slivers of right of way. We bundled them up and we're selling them for 535,000.
535.
So staff is making progress. Okay. But
I saw Larry today. I'll ask him when we're going
to
come
back. But we need to reconvene and brief you on.
We are going to bring you a chunk of property.
And we need to bring our risk management back and talk about the weapon permit.
Yes. Yeah, that was on the schedule for today.
We were going to present it today. We've got a pretty tight draft for the policy, for the application, but it's with the prosecuting attorney's office.
Yeah, Emily, our new employment attorney, had an issue or two. She wanted to work with HR, and so we'll bring that back next week or the week after. Right.
And I related to that, I just finished up all the online education, Gen Suite courses.
Yes, I appreciate your efforts there. Yeah, 100%. Our whole office here was 100%, so thank you both.
He was the only one on the list. I went and looked. There was a big list of people.
Anyway, related to that, there's content that is incompatible with the policies. The process that we have to respect that Second Amendment. So I would take a look at those that have to do with firearms and make sure we're not misinforming people.
Well, I think Mark has something to share with us.
Yeah, well, still, whatever, regardless of that,
that is,
we need
that. That was a pretty general comment. Could you narrow it down a little bit? Is there one specific training, one particular
slide? There are two courses, and the titles of those courses are very clearly weapons and guns and those kinds of things. We just go back and through it, and they jump right out at you. What we say is like zero.
Just a couple of inconsistencies with the new policy.
Yeah,
so it's not, yeah.
In general,
in general,
they're good and informational. Okay,
I think that's so
we have
I don't
not
know what you guys are talking about.
We have not passed a new policy. The right to ask for permission for concealed carry has been in the policy all along.
But that's not reflected in the courses we just took.
Yeah, it's not reflected in the course.
Okay.
I'll go look at it. See if I can pinpoint them.
Yeah, we'll take the course again.
Okay, was that workplace violence? Is that the one?
I think it is.
Yeah, okay. It's workplace violence.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, you were saying something.
No, I would.
He was talking about how he's going to do his training.
No, they were talking about something that
were you on a dolly building again?
That was in policy, and I was not sure what you were talking about.
I misspoke.
Oh, okay.
Take the word policy out.
Who has the applications for the analysts?
I have them.
I keep beating on them to get that done.
How many do you have?
Well, we had like a total of 80. We're down to 15.
I thought we were down to 12 or something. And then they just end up on the corner of your desk?
That's right.
We got to fill that.
Yeah, so well, that was one of my things to bring up with what process the board wants to move forward. We the four of us have gone through them.
I'd like to get it down to six or eight and then arrange the interviews.
I have a suggestion. The method that we already have in place for all of the advisory boards, we get a little notebook, and you put the information in there. We each select who we're interested in, follow that process. That should be that works really well.
Isn't that what we're doing?
No.
Well, that's my question. When I was hired, my assumption is there was a phone interview that I did initially. They probably did that with 10 or 12 people, maybe 8. Then 6 or so of us got interviewed. I got interviewed with a panel of people. And the top 3 came to the board. If you just want us to put these 15, I mean, we've narrowed it down. I can put them in a binder. The board can make the decision based on the binders, who they want to interview. The 3 of you can put checks next to them. If you don't want Mark and I involved, we won't be part of the panel.
Well,
it's up to you how you want to do it.
Yeah, I think that standardized system works really well. For it just provides the process, so and that works really well. That allows us to be able to pare it down to simply be because of the way that we can select those who want to interview. Those that don't get check marks, they don't get interviewed.
Well, we've sort of had a modified process already. A spreadsheet was developed. Yeah. It was color coded. You indicated your top, my top axles. Out of that, we've got a population of 15.
Uh-huh.
we need to do the same process again. We can put them in binders, and then you can rank them 1 through 15, or you can just pick the top
it's
6.
It's hard. That's a pretty qualified
There's
people.
There's some really good people.
Pretty hard to narrow it down.
Okay, we'll create 3 binders with the 15 apps in it, and we'll give it back to you. The way we came to the 15, just so everybody knows, is I had to take them down. Any application that had 2 or more checks or selections, then I put in that pile of 15. So that's how we got to 15. Any combination of 2 or more of the 4 of us.
Yeah. So if you and Commissioner Medora picked a guy, he went on the list.
I don't know if I didn't make any marks.
No, you gave me your pile. I compiled.
And then you created a spreadsheet out of that.
So I got to go back through it again.
We just gave a list of names.
Yep. And names, I had your pile, I had marks.
So now I'll go back through and make marks?
No, I'm gonna probably work with Tina or get some help. We'll take the 15 that we've narrowed it down to, and I'll give you a binder with them, and you guys can work that out. You can work out the 3 of you.
I want to narrow before we get to the binder part.
From the 15.
I don't want to interview 15.
No.
That's going to be who you choose to select.
You trim it. We'll give you the binder, and then you pick your top 6 or 8 out of the 15.
I'll give the same thing with our application.
Did you want
but,
to?
But we went from 80 down to 15, and now we're going to go from 15 down to 6 or 8.
I'm just trying to save a tree.
Well,
you don't have to regret it again.
They want
to
pick a number. They want to pick a number 6, 8. Whatever.
Well, no, I think what would be beneficial, though, is if you each get a binder, you're saying, like we do for the other ones, you'll have a binder with these 15 names in it. You each choose who you think should be interviewed, and we can try to pair those
Which
up.
Is exactly what we're doing with for the advisory board, board selection standard process.
So we'll do that.
We've never done 15 before. We've done it with somewhere between 3 and 7.
What do we have for parks?
Okay.
12.
Get her done.
I
need the help in the office.
And
there's another vacancy that, to my knowledge, hasn't moved at all. Either we get the right person or we do away with the position, and that's we turn it to Joe Walsh's position.
I thought they hired somebody.
I have no clue. I have no clue.
I don't either.
I was very interested in what they were doing, and
we should ask.
So we were going to eliminate the position, and then we did the research.
We should ask Dee Dee yesterday when we saw her. I'll ask her what's going on.
I don't know.
No, I
talked to Francine about it. The last thing I talked to.
When can we expect the binders?
I don't know. At this point, I'll say tomorrow because we have the 15, and I've got them clipped, so I know exactly which ones.
By Friday.
And the other thing we've had already talked about, it was that we were going to probably be a little bit more redundant or specific as to what work sessions that we have coming forward, because I know it's been confusing because we had some stuff handed down from Kelly Sills, and it ended up into a work session that we weren't prepared for, and we had to get input from the cities and all of that. And
fireworks.
Yeah, and so we need to be. And the same thing happened on some legal information that we thought we had a difference of opinion as to what we talked about and what we agreed about. And so we need to be more specific, not only in conclusion or summary of our board meetings, but our executive sessions. Questions?
Now, what do we do with that?
I think by talking about summary is like at the end of our meeting, we say what was the conclusion? You have a question as to what we've done. So today that's very, very clear that we're, for example, we made items up here, but what we talked about that wasn't on here was animal control. What we're going to do, progressive report, and we have an understanding of what we're looking for for the youth commission and the youth house. Excess properties, we talked about that. What are we clear in expectations of when it comes next? And when our next hearing is going to be and what it's going to be about. Or if we're going to have a work session and what it's going to be about. Because in the last couple of weeks, we've had hearings that weren't prepared and work sessions that was incomplete.
In other words, you kind of like action item minutes.
Well, Mark and I do that.
after the meeting, we will combine our lists from here with things that we have to do, and then
share it,
and so share it to do, make sure we're on the same page. I think the new piece you're talking about, Commissioner Mielke, is, I guess you guys have one-on-ones on Mondays, but is there, and I'm just thinking out loud here, Mark, but is there a better way that we can sit down with the board either early in the week or late in the week to say, here's what's coming?
We could do that, or we could do a recap like we do at the work session.
Yeah.
Either one of us.
Okay, well, when we schedule work sessions, you gave blanket permission to Oliver because of his very strict timeline for the comp plan update process to schedule things. And so he comes up to Rebecca, schedule things, and then we have the work sessions, and mm-hmm. he presents the material, mm-hmm. all to keep it moving along. Mm-hmm. But any other work session, the department requesting it fills out a 10-step planner that you're mm-hmm. providing copies of mm-hmm. that explains what the work session is, what material will be presented, what actions required of the board, and then you say, schedule it. Mm-hmm. So to say that we're not ready for work sessions when you get the material in advance and approve the work sessions, I'm not sure is completely accurate.
Well, we had a couple of hiccups.
Now,
we've done pretty good, but I could give you a couple of examples.
Okay, and certainly we can always redouble our efforts to do better.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
There used to be a document that after every work session, they called the memorialization.
When we started recording the sessions, we did away with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it's duplicate work.
We could do that, but we can't do that for an executive session. So
right.
Maybe we do an oral recap at the end of
lock it up.
So if there's, if you're unclear as to what direction was given, what the conclusion was, when you're supposed to bring back the report, because what can happen, you cover so much material that unless you have some kind of memorialization or you go back and review the meeting, things fall in the rain, mm-hmm. and then you're reviewing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
See, I'm just thinking for Ed, someone his age.
Smack him right now. Go ahead.
Actually,
or you're hot on his heels, aren't you there, Commissioner Mielke?
Here's kind of a simplification of that. You're right, Mark, and that if we end up with a memorialization of what was said, what was done, what was presented, that kind of thing, that's redundant work that mm-hmm. duplicates what's already there in the audio. However, when it comes to the final one or two or three points or decisions or action items or directions, those probably ought to be simplified with one or two or three sentences, just as a bottom line of what direction was given.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to repeat any of the other content, just the direction that was given ought to be clearly presented
and
printed there in the
just to recap
in the grid.
On those specific
so we know.
And that would be attached to the grid, a little tiny document that would be
staff,
not on a grid.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because your chain's hanging out and I wanted to yank it.
Just checking.
All right.
So basically what we have then, we got the little, because we always do make a work session entry on the grid, and we put a little audio tape there, and we put the presentation there, so we have one more document that's, the so what, or the action items, or the conclusions,
okay.
or the direction.
Yeah, that'd be useful, because at the end of the property management work session that we had, the ask of the board was incredibly specific.
Yeah.
Board, we have reviewed hundreds of parcels, and we have determined that they are not marketable, saleable.
Yeah.
There's a valid purpose for keeping them.
Yeah.
We have hundreds more to continue to look at.
Yeah.
Would you like us to spend the additional time to review the rest of them? And you said, yes.
Good.
Go forth and do so.
Yeah. Yeah. So something as simple as that would be the conclusion that would be at the end of every work session gets entered. And there it is. What did we decide? What direction was given?
Action
there it is.
Item.
Okay. Got it.
And sometimes it's not action.
Well,
sometimes
it's
no action, like on fireworks. Well, no, fireworks, it was get with the city, see if we can synchronize our approach and so on.
Yeah.
That's all I have. Axel?
Oh, I got one more item on the agenda. A vacancy request for a programmer analyst out of IT.
When's your turn? Okay. Axel, you get the anchor here after he gets done. Go ahead, Mark.
We giving priority to the important person here first.
Okay. this is 100% general funded. The previous incumbent had a skill set that was completely obsolete. He was put on a performance improvement plan. He failed to improve, and so the county let him go. Mm-hmm. They have a programming backlog up there that's enormous.
Yeah.
They are the facilitators. They're the force multipliers who create the tools that enable our staff to be more efficient and effective. So I would strongly recommend you give Mr. Hominick the authority to replace the person that left.
I've already gone over this, and absolutely it's allowing our staff to work smarter. And certainly a green light, not only that I know it shows 100% coming from the general fund, but in reality, when they do work for the different departments, they bill that department.
Right, but we don't know what the mix might end up being, so we just put general fund there.
Yeah.
Although the hit to the general fund could be smaller.
Yeah. And it could be a general fund from that department, a general fund from that department as well. So it could be
exactly.
General fund.
Exactly.
So I'm
okay.
A green light.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Axel,
you were previously usurped.
All right.
Oh, is this a quiet zone? Oh, boy.
Yeah, you know.
Favorite subject.
Actually, so.
Could you bring Mr. Barnes up to speed on
that? Yes.
Just the last 6 months.
Just the last 6 months.
Not the whole 2 years.
So, Commissioner Barnes, the Quiet Zone has been my favorite public project of my career. And I've been working on it for a while. I don't want to say how long. But a Quiet Zone is, Quiet Zones are relatively new. The federal rules changed the FRA. Yeah, so Congress made it possible that if you put the right safety measures in place at a rail and highway grade crossing, they'll shut down the horns on the train. So people love that because people live by these crossings and they despise the train horns, as you can imagine. A while back, some citizens from Palaita approached us about looking at 122nd up there. It's just up off of the Vancouver Lake up on the slough. There's a marina down there. The road runs all the way down the hill to the marina, and there's a crossing. And so they asked us about looking into a quiet zone there. We went forward. We said we would look at it. The board was gracious and said we'll work with Public Works to try to get this thing done cheaply and quickly and efficiently. And so there's really three kinds of options, although there's combinations that you can do. You can do medians that go in the road and they keep people from going around the gates. And if you do that, that meets the rule. You can shut down the horn. You can do wayside horns, which is just a horn that they mount on the crossing gate and it shoots directionally exactly the right decibel. And so you limit a lot of the extra noise that goes all over. Or you can do extra gates, which these are all more expensive than each other. But the extra gates are the most expensive, but they're also the safest, and then you've got four gates. Nobody can get in and around, and it's safe. What we looked at down there was doing a median approach. It was relatively cost-effective, $25,000-$30,000. We had a lot of surveying because you're working in the railroad right-of-way. We had the marina down there on the west side. We had to make sure we weren't in their property. And where we eventually kind of stalled out was on the east side. The road comes down so steep that it's got a deep ravine, and in order to get the width of the road correct to line up to come across the tracks and put that median in there, we were going to have to dig into the hillsides. And our engineer, the construction manager, Scott, everybody just said it's not safe to do. You know, there's already a slide history down there. Getting into those slopes to widen this, it just didn't make sense. And so we kind of had to go back to the drawing board, so to say. And what you're holding is cost estimates. This has all kind of been bubbling up with emails, and I've been working with the citizens out there. They're admittedly frustrated. They would love to have this done, but they understand where we are. I had a really good meeting with them just this week. Monday. What day is it? I'm still tired from last night,
too. It's only 3 days into it.
They came in yesterday morning. They met with us. We had a very good, it was a positive meeting with
I would call it a dose of reality, just saying, look, you know, this isn't as easy as we thought it was going to be with the median. We've costed out, and I think done a pretty good job. It's not, you know, we're not totally drilled down tight to the numbers, but we've costed out all of the reasonable or realistic, I think, approaches to fixes. We dug very deep. The second page is the spreadsheet of the medians specifically and why some of those costs have gone up. But the reality is you probably can put a quiet zone down there, but it's going to cost some money. And once it trips up over a certain level, and this is the difficult part for those folks and for us, is we're not in the $20,000, $30,000 range. We're in the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 range. And so when you get there, we can't just go out and do it for you. That's a gift of public funds, and your neighborhood has to come up with something. They have to put the money up to do it because it's a benefit to your community. So that's a whole nother process that adds a whole nother layer to this, because you got to set up either a road improvement district, a local improvement district, or a transportation improvement district. And those are complicated because you're going out, you're trying to establish a nexus of benefit from the community to the project, and you're trying to assess them, and you have to actually put it on the tax roll to assess them a certain amount of money over time to pay back the county for the infrastructure. So it's hard. I think, like I said, we had a good meeting with them on Tuesday. They understand where we're at. I told them, the board told me to put the project on hold. We were going to go out for geotech work on the hillside, and we were going to do the noise study to try to establish just how unsafe those hillsides are. Not the noise study, that's the geotech. The noise study was going to try to establish exactly who would benefit. So, you know, if you got to do a transportation improvement district, you got to define the boundaries of the district. We were going to use the noise study to do that, see where the horn really reached to and at what decibels. And we've been working with Tom on the project. The only real outside cost we've incurred on this project to this point is Tom Walsh. We've paid him right around $3,900. We haven't spent any money on anybody outside or any studies or anything yet. And so the board said to last week to hold that until we made some further decisions. But I made the residents out there aware that we may be at a point where we need to get their neighborhood back involved. Maybe they need to take this to their neighborhood and decide which option works for them or which option they think they could help fund, because that's where we're going to ultimately be, is in, we're going to be at a solution where the neighborhood needs to step up and help pay for it. You can form these districts either by the board passing a resolution and setting the boundaries and forming it, or it can come in from the citizens via petition. So arguably the citizens out there, if they want to do one of these options and they want to step up and pay for it, they can petition the board for that solution. So that's kind of where we are. We've got a team. We've been working on it, and we've been trying to, you know, we've been trying to do the best we can and work with the residents and keep them happy. But admittedly, it's taken a long time and it's frustrating.
You had a meeting with some of the major players on this. What were the, what kind of a feeling did you get from them as when you started quoting those prices? What was their reaction to that?
They do not have a bad reaction to this. They understand that, you know, some of these other things are costly. They've always been, I think, disappointed that the median wouldn't just work down there, and that once you start putting blocks up and retaining walls and trying to keep those walls up, the cost goes up by quite a bit. One thing they did ask, they said, well, I think what they want, though, is they want a decision, and in order to make the decision to get away from the median, they want to know, can it fit down there or not? And what we've had two engineers look at it, Tom and Tom, and one construction manager, and I think our opinion is no, it can't. The median cannot fit down there without getting at least to some degree into those hillsides, and once you do that, you've compromised some things, and you really need to account for it with some stabilization devices. Tom Grange, who's our Public Works construction manager, he didn't go that far with them and tell them there's no way, no how that we can't put a median down there. And he said even to some degree he could take some, you know, he could take some GIS data and specifically look at the topography and try to have one of the engineers look at it to see if it's possible. But we've done that, and I, you know, again, my, and it's my opinion, which is not an engineering opinion, but I think it would be very hard to make a median work down there for an affordable cost.
Can I ask some questions on this?
Sure.
How many people came in yesterday to, on this?
There was three.
Okay. The assuming these are the finite choices they could choose from, did they reject the ones where they still have a wayside horn, whether it be on the east side or both sides?
I can probably only speak for one person on that who has told me flat out, no way I'll fight the wayside horn. But they all, none of these residents live right above the crossing, and none of them will support a wayside horn.
Okay, so we'll scratch the wayside horn off. Yeah. Because whatever we do in this, even if we have, as the commissioners, the authority to impose a tax to make this improvement, we would only do that, I expect, in response to their petition and their request that they can organize themselves and sign up for something that is not a wayside horn. So that basically says you've got the median on both sides is the obvious lowest cost choice that does that basically silences the horn, right?
Yeah. And that's if you're going to go down there and you're going to put those, you know, you're going to dig into the hill.
Yeah, right. But that's a defined choice.
Yeah.
And the question is at this point, is there another variation of this that's significantly lower cost that we have not investigated, or are you, or is this the real practical only viable choice that we ought to consider?
I think that's what's been difficult is ruling out the median on both sides because of the steep slopes on that one side.
Well, the question is, our public works staff would be the one to make the call whether what they can do.
Yep.
And as an alternative to actually end up with a lower cost than this, right? That would be the only reason we would pursue any kind of an alternative with any extra work for public works to go out there to see if they can beat this price by a substantial amount, right?
Yeah, so you're correct, Commissioner. The two that we are realistically, I believe, at this point looking at are the medians on both sides and how cheap can we make that. And the one going past the quad gates, the other one is a hybrid. It's a median on the marina side. Where
but it's
we
still a wayside horn.
Right? No, it's an exit gate. So basically, you put on the steep slope side where we don't want to dig into the hills, we put an extra crossing arm.
Well,
on
why
the
would
other
you,
side, we put the median.
Why if the choice, mm-hmm. I'm going to call it A, median both sides, 360,000.
Yep.
If that solves their problem, why would we consider a more expensive problem, the 430,000?
Well, for the same reason that this has been a struggle for, I think, me and the rest of the staff, is right now, the intersection is what it is. If we go down, even if we can go down, I think as a staff, at least when I go down there and I'm responsible for this project, I'm still not going to feel good if we go down there and do a $360,000 project and we do what we think we do to stabilize those slopes, and then something happens and that slope
comes
down.
Words, you think that the choice A here
I think
is a high risk, unacceptable risk.
Yeah. Because as soon as the county touches that intersection or touches that hillside, we are flat out on the hook for anything that happens. And from a liability, you know, we're going to get pulled in anyways if something happens, and I think we have to be honest about that. But those slopes, I mean, when you look at them, and you know, it's just one of those situations where once we get into it, we're going to really own it. Our name's going to be on it. And maybe we can do a real good project by widening and putting a median in down there for $360,000, but it's still ours, and we still, you know, and, you know, it could be anything from, you know, one of the homeowners above that creates a slide on their property, and now we're into it for their backyard or their house, or
you know, it just takes out the road and we got to clean it up, or it goes all the way down to the tracks. I mean, I don't know, but I think that anyone I've spoken to include our own county employees, when you're talking to professionals about getting into those hillsides, they get very nervous.
Well,
and I get nervous. So I hate to rule it out because it is the cheapest, and there probably is some very safe professional ways we can shore up those banks and put it in. But it's a high risk option, in my opinion.
You want to mitigate the risk so that if you cut into those banks, you put some concrete walls in there, or you do something Public Works, who handles these kind of problems all the time, that they would design something that would be that would mitigate that risk.
Right.
They build roads all the time.
Yeah, the more robust the mitigation, the higher the cost.
Right. And so the question is, of this particular cost here, $360,000, does that include...
It's broken out on the second page.
The safety measures necessary to mitigate that risk.
I think according to Tom Walsh, does.
And well, he's got according to our Public Works, has Public Works.
Yeah, Matt Hall and Tom Grange have looked at this, and I think they feel like this is a... On the second page, it's broken out. You can see how much for concrete barriers, how much for stormwater management, how much, you know, he puts the specifics in there. But
so it was the railroad that told us about the medians and what they had to be.
Yeah. So, okay, so let's suppose if our Public Works department, who goes out there and they would plan this and they would spend about that much money. I assume the process would be for those individuals that came in or are interested in this, they would rally their troops, they would do all the organization and the communication, and they would come in with a petition that says, this is what we want. Are they willing to do that?
I think The folks that I met with yesterday, and the people that live out there, that I regularly talk to six or seven people, they would say absolutely our neighborhood wants this, and they would go farther and say we can probably get 15 of us that will try to put as much of this cash down for this because it would improve our quality of life that much.
If we end up forming some kind of a taxing district to pay for this, will that allow those neighbors that are highly motivated to put the money in above and beyond just simply because they want this thing done, and leave other neighbors that don't have to pay? Have we checked with legal about that?
Yeah. We don't know any of this until we have the neighbor association willing to step up, whether it be the 360 or the 770. And so, and if we start down that track, we're going to have to go down and do a geotech. And once you start into geotech, you're committed to so many dollars. So, once again, the people you met with, I hope you task them with going back to their community and saying, are you the people here interested in putting together the organization, the association, that's willing to step this up? And if you want to do the cheaper of the two to start with, the cash register starts. So I don't want to go in there and do a geotech without them knowing that the geotech man says that's not going to work, and the next option is going to be the one gate with the median is the second $430,000.
I think you're right, Commissioner. When we've tried to get them that far, because from their end, what they're frustrated—it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? They're frustrated because they're like, "Well, we can't go to our community until we know what we're at." They're going to say, "Well, what are you asking me for?" So I think we have gotten them far enough to they can now show people something and say, "Are you in on this?"
It has a question.
Well, a question we need to ask. So you know, without looking at going down there and looking at the project, transportation people normally always want to build something big, bulky, jersey barriers, whatever, concrete walls like you're talking about. I've seen places in industrial plants and stuff where they sink 6 or 8 inch pipes down in the ground. Which you're limited to space. You don't want to mess up the mountainside.
that you just go along there and you would put down, drill the holes, you'd put down 6 or 8 inch pipes and you'd fill it full of concrete. Then you'd put a skid plate on that concrete from one of those pipes to the other one that would actually keep the people from using that. You could put that on both sides of that road or down the straight medium of the center of the road. You could do that at a lot cheaper than that. And like I say, people, when you tell them look at a road and look at a concrete, they start looking. But I can take you to paper mills and stuff, and you've seen it before too, where they put a quarter inch or half inch plate around corners and stuff like that as a skid plate so people bump into it. I think that, Axel, I think you guys maybe take a look at that. I think it would be a heck of a lot cheaper, and it would do the same thing, and they could paint it red, white, and blue, or whatever they wanted to paint the thing. But this is a pretty costly thing, and to have it, like you say, eventually, if the hillside comes down, regardless of whether you had anything to do with it or not, the county is going to be involved in litigation on it.
So on a question I have for you, Tom, you were talking about how you really need to see buy-in from the neighbors.
Absolutely.
Okay. What impractical reality could those neighbors bring back to you? What impractical reality could those neighbors bring back to you that would convince you that there is enough neighborhood buy-in? Do they have to have a formalized neighborhood association where they meet, they discuss it, they vote on it, and they sign off on it? Or what would you, because he is kind of caught in the chicken and the egg thing. They're saying,
petition,
yeah, or but like what? That. How do they prove as a neighborhood that they have the buy-in from enough people to even go forward with this?
I think that they have to know what range of commitment
money,
that they're going to
the
be
money.
Looking
That's
at.
That's right, the money.
Whether it's going to be 300,000 or 400,000. And at that point, they're going to say, we're interested or we're not.
And that's what I've been trying
to do.
Yeah, and you've got to convert that into what's the monthly impact on my budget.
Yeah,
because if we have how many residents live there, how mm-hmm. what's the term of the taxing district?
That's what they would do.
But how do you define
association.
They? Pardon? That's what I'm saying. How do you define they?
Yeah, see, because now we're going back to where I was, which is the sound study, right?
You've got to determine the benefit zone.
They could go out to their own neighbors and say, hey, you guys hear this noise down here all the time. Are you interested in it? And they could go out to 15 neighbors or 20
like
neighbors.
Like a petition?
And
petition,
when they knock on the door and the guy says, yeah, I hear it. I'd like to stop it. Are you interested in joining an association to pay this off?
Well, they did that on the Salmon Creek noise wall, if you remember, and it cost us $14 million.
Well,
was this on I-5?
And all the neighborhoods signed it. They signed up for it, but
then they got the bill.
Taxpayers ended up paying $14 million for it. So it's
two things. One, this needs to be citizen initiative, citizen driven, mm-hmm. and we wouldn't dictate what the zone is, what the size is, or any of that stuff. Whoever wants to champion this from that neighborhood would go recruit enough neighbors to be able to pay for this thing. Mm-hmm. And they would bring to us enough support that helps us to know that whether or not they're willing to pay for it. You got enough money. But I think Commissioner Barnes here has a really good point, and that is that we don't want to overkill this thing with a super expensive project.
Mm-hmm.
And so one idea here is that maybe you want to go talk with our Public Works Department, go out there and take a look and say, why don't you do this and this and this? You end up with a $75,000 project that gets it done just simply because you got to bring some of that experience with you.
And why I say that, David, we wanted to put jersey barriers at the cul-de-sac on 50th Avenue. Your county guys come out there and said, we can't afford that. The state said we can't afford to give the money either. I can take you out there and show you. So what your county guys did, they were pretty smart. They come out there and they put 8x8s in the ground. They concreted them in mm-hmm. around that cul-de-sac to keep the people from driving up into county property mm-hmm. where they were dumping refrigerators, stoves, mm-hmm. Mattresses, and everything else. We filled up about 6 or 7 great big dumpsters full of stuff they dumped there. The guys put that there, and then they took a cable and they drilled a cable between all of those things
connected
around that cul-de-sac like that. And in order for the people to keep from stealing that cable, they took these little grommets and they put in between that cable and crimped it there, and nobody's got up in there since. No mm-hmm. garbage up in there.
Yeah.
And, it costs very little amount of money.
So, Mr. Practical Problem Solver, why don't you link up with somebody from our Public Works? Go out there and see if you can come up with
just let me caution you.
I don't want to go backwards, and that's what we would do. And I said, you know, we're not the engineers.
Yeah.
Well, I was just about to say that the reason we hire PEs in Public right. Works is because they calculate stresses. They yeah. do all the engineering work, and they calculate what they need for a safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should have brought pictures, but this is not small.
So
this is going to be
what's
a
very important is that we started off. We said we could do this for $20,000. Remember that?
Yeah.
That's where we started. I think we've got $20,000 worth of his time into it so far, in the last 2 years, and we're no farther today. Except we now have something to take to an association yeah. and say. It could cost you $450,000. Are you interested? Mm-hmm. And if you're not, we walk.
I'd buy some expensive earplugs and be done with it.
Well, I'll yes. work with them. I told them I'd communicate with them today or tomorrow yes. after this, and that's kind of what I'll relay.
Hey, this
hey we've
good
got
stuff.
Some options. We need to get with the community and find out if there's a real drive for this or not.
And it's very important. The more, the larger the association, the smaller the payment over a certain
That's
amount
right.
of time. So
the more people they can sign up, I did the math on $500,000
mm-hmm.
for 500 parcels, than I did on 250. I mean, it gets down to a number where it's
cheap.
It's doable. I mean, it's doable.
Very doable.
Those are probably way too high in numbers.
Well, it may be. 150 may be too many.
Yeah,
I
looked at the neighborhood. Yeah. I would think more like 50.
Yeah.
You know, so
train horn goes a long ways.
You bet.
Again, you can always make a suggestion to them and have them look at it. So
yeah. Yeah, but I'm with Commissioner Medora.
Maybe
you
want to
pass this
back
off to the citizens.
There's another way to do this. But the thing is that they have to realize that whether we start off with a $70,000 job, that they have to step up and do it. In other words, it's off the table. We've exhausted all of our resources on it.
Yeah. We've gone the whole way trying
yeah,
to figure
have.
Out how to do it.
Yeah, it's a good job, Axel. You're really good. Holly?
I have nothing.
Nothing? Anything else for the good of the order?
Anything from our guest?
No? Okay. All right. I think we're done. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Oh, congrats.